Osho, Tao, The Three Treasures, Volume 2. Talks on fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
The first question. Ismail Siddhartha once wisely said that Bhagwan is a girl, my feelings also. Many times you have said as much, and your ways of surrender and passivity echo the essential female in Lao Tse. If choice was possible, why didn't you assume a male form? Why did you assume a male form for your final showdown? First thing, Ismail Siddhartha is not so small. He is one of the ancient ones. His words may be that of a child, but his wisdom is not. Watching Ismail Siddhartha, you can understand why Lao Tse has been thought to be born old. Siddhartha is born old. When he says something, he exactly knows something, that's why he says it. He is right. The final showdown is always of a woman. The form of the body does not matter. The form of the inner being is always that of woman, whether it was Buddha, Zarathustra, Christ or Lao Tse, it makes no difference. The final showdown is always that of the feminine being, the feminine mystic. All aggression disappears. All violence disappears. One becomes a total receptivity. That's what a woman is. One becomes a womb. One becomes such an infinite womb that one can contain the whole universe. That's why Hindu concepts of God are more of the mother than of the father. They are meaningful. But why, if choice was possible, why did you assume a male form? In fact, choice is always male. To choose is to be male. Not to choose is to be female. Accept whatsoever happens is to be female. Receive whatsoever is given with gratefulness is to be female. To complain, to grumble, to grudge, to choose, to have one's own say is to be male. Whenever you want that something should be according to you, you are male. The ego has entered. The ego is male. So choice is not in fact possible. Feminine means surrender. One moves like a white cloud. No mind of one's own. One accepts, and one accepts joyfully. One delights, because all directions are his. All forms are his. How to choose? What to choose? Because choice means rejection also. Rejecting something, you choose something. In every choice there is a rejection. If you want to be the whole, how can you choose? You have to be choiceless. Remember that. The more you choose, the more male mind enters in you. The less you choose and remain into choicelessness, just leaving all to existence itself, the more feminine you become. The mystery is this, that when you become feminine, all happens to you, not part. You are no more living as a fragment. You live as the whole. That's why there was no choice for me. Soon there will be no choice for you also. Prepare yourself. Prepare for choicelessness. If you want that the whole should sour on you as whole, then don't choose. If you choose, you will remain a beggar. If you don't choose, you become the emperor. The second question, sometimes I have the feeling that it is not us who are the real listeners. Do you have other disciples, unseen, unknown by us, and less sleepy than we are? If I say yes, it won't mean a thing to you. If I say no, it will be wrong. So now you can understand. I will repeat, if I say yes, it won't mean a thing to you. If I say no, it will be wrong. Third question. I know nothing. I don't even know what to ask. What question is there? And what words can answer the problems of a sleeping soul? When the only answer is already so pronounced, be awake, be total. It is your presence that my question seeks, not your response. This is a complex question and comes out of a very complex mind. The question seems to be very simple, direct, straight. It is not. In the beginning, the questioner says, I know nothing. If it is really true, the latter part cannot come. Then comes the full stop. If you really feel you know nothing, then what is there to say? Full stop. It would have been enough. But no, then comes knowledge in. I know nothing. I don't even know what to ask. What question is there? And what words can answer the problems of a sleeping soul when the only answer is already so pronounced? Be awake, be total. All this is your knowledge. If you have really heard, as you say, that the only answer is so pronounced, if you have really heard it, you cannot be ignorant. If you have really heard it, then how can you say that you are sleeping? In sleep you cannot hear it. Be awake, be total. For it to understand, you will have to come out of your sleep. You must be dreaming that you have heard the answer. In the beginning you say, I know nothing. Do you think something more is needed to explain it? It is completely explanatory in itself. Nothing more is needed. Nothing more is to be added to make it more clear. In fact, whatsoever you will add will make it more murky and puzzled. I know nothing is so simple, but no, you know well that this is just a trick. You know, you are playing a game of ignorance to appear wise because you have heard that people who are wise, they say that they don't know anything at all. You are being clever. This cleverness will kill you. This cleverness is not going to help. If you know nothing, you know nothing. And if you know nothing and you can remain with your ignorance, you will feel my presence. Because when someone is ignorant, someone is vast, infinite. Ignorance has no boundaries, only knowledge has boundaries. Only knowledge has limitations. Ignorance has no limitations. Ignorance is infinite. Knowledge is closed. Ignorance is an opening, infinite opening. Knowledge is noisy. Ignorance is silent. There is nothing to be noisy about. There is nothing to fuss about. One is ignorant, finished. One is ignorant then. Then your other words that follow cannot follow. They simply cannot exist with ignorance. No, you are trying to be wise. You say, I don't know even what to ask. What question is there? From where these words are coming? Out of your ignorance? And what words can answer the problems of a sleeping soul? You already know everything. You are a sleeping soul. No words can answer your questions. When the only answer is already so pronounced, you have already heard the answer also. And you know the answer. Be awake, be total. It is your presence that my question seeks, not your response. If you are ignorant, there is no need to seek my presence. It is already there in your infinite ignorance, without boundaries. You meet me. You meet the whole. You meet God. You meet Tao. You have not known the beauty of ignorance, no. You are trying to pretend to be ignorant, but your knowledge won't allow you. It comes in between. It is always there, surrounding you. Even if you say that you are ignorant, you will make that ignorance appear very knowledgeable. You will decorate that ignorance with knowledge. Ignorance is naked, nude. You cannot decorate it. Only knowledge is decorated, polished. Knowledge is like a whore, always in the market for sale. Ignorance, who will purchase ignorance? To whom you can sell it? Nobody needs it. In fact, everybody already has got it within him. There is no need to decorate it. It is like night, dark, silent. Not even a single movement. Words cannot exist with ignorance. So whatsoever you say in the first part, you destroy in the latter part. By the end of your question, you have destroyed it completely. Don't play the game with yourself, because nobody else is going to be deceived by it except yourself. It happened. A disciple was with his Zen master for many years and nothing happened. And he tried whatsoever the master said and still nothing happened. Because in fact he was not trying, he was pretending to try. He was just showing that he is trying. He was playing a game. He was not sincere. Then he started asking others what to do. I do everything, whatsoever the master says, nothing happens. Somebody says, it will not happen. It is difficult. It is almost impossible. The only way is, if you want really to happen, you have to die. That man by this time has become such a practitioner of pretensions that he said, I will do it. He went to the master to see him. Suddenly, as the master saw him, he fell down on the ground, closed his eyes, pretended that he is dead. The master had a hearty laugh. Because you can pretend everything, but how can you pretend that you are dead? It is the last of absurdities. The master says, right, you did well. But one question before you disappear completely. What about the cone, the problem I have given you to solve? The master has given him a problem to meditate upon. The very basic problem that if you want to create sound with one hand, how it will sound, the sound of one hand. The pretender opened his one eye and said, Master, that I couldn't solve yet. The master hit him hard, kicked him hard and said, you hypocrite, don't you know this much, that dead men don't answer any questions. You are dead, but immediately you answer a question. If really you are ignorant, then all other words that have you written are false, useless, futile, meaningless, gibberish. But if they are meaningful, then whatsoever you have said in the beginning is a pretension. That's why I say the question is complex. And then you want my presence. A presence cannot be desired. You have to wait for it. You cannot want it. It is a free gift. Whenever you are ready, it is given. And your knowledge won't allow you to receive my response. The man is saying that I am not in any way interested in your answers, because the man knows the answers already. He is a man of knowledge. He wants my presence. But what have you done to earn it? Just by desiring, do you think you become capable? Then why these others are trying to get my response. Are they fools except you? In fact, to pass through response is a training to reach to the presence. You ask a question, I respond to you. By and by, your questions will drop. Not that you will become more knowledgeable. If you become more knowledgeable, then more questions will arise. No. If you really listen to me, if you try to understand me, not the words, but the space between the words, not the lines, but the space between the lines, not what I say, but that which I mean. If you understand it, you will become ready. By and by, questions will drop. And when a no-question mind arises, a non-questioning mind arises, suddenly my presence will burst upon you. These answers are to make you ignorant. These answers are to bring your knowledge out, to help you to unlearn it. But all depends on you. You can gather my answers without listening to the meaning. You can gather the words, then they will become more and more a burden of knowledge on you, on your head. Then more questions will arise, because every answer is capable of creating 1,001 questions. Then you miss the point. Then you were not in fact here with me. You have been on your own trip, your ego trip. It is not my trip, it was your trip. You were not with me. If you listen really, just through listening, questions will disappear. And whenever, one day it will happen, that in your mind there is not a single question, that is the point when you can say, I know nothing. Not even to ask a question, because to ask a question is to know something. How can you ask a question without knowing anything? Even to ask a question, a certain knowledge is needed. Otherwise, how you will ask? If you ask, who is God, what is God, at least you know something about God. Otherwise, the question cannot arise. A child suddenly cannot ask, where is God? No. First, he has to learn that God is. God created the world. Through this learning, the question will arise. Questions are not out of ignorance. Questions are out of knowledge. When questions drop, you have the infinity of ignorance. A dark night, beautiful, velvet-like. Infinite. You are in it, dissolved completely as a drop in the ocean. Then you feel my presence. Knowledge is the barrier. And you say that you are not interested in my response. Then you are destroying the very bridge. Then you will not be able to feel my presence. That will become impossible. First, you have to allow me to kill all that you know, to destroy it, to demolish something which has gone wrong within you. Only then I can be creative. Presence is a creative phenomenon. My answers are just destructive. They are to destroy something. They are to rediscover your ignorance and with it the infinity. If you can become totally ignorant, you have taken the first step to become totally wise. Totality is the bridge. If you are totally ignorant, then totality has already happened. And totality is the bridge. Then from ignorance to reach to wisdom, there is not much problem. The bridge is open. The bridge is ready. So be total. At this moment, you can be total only in ignorance. Then the next happening will be total in wisdom. But you go on clinging with small bits of knowledge. Don't try to be clever with me. Be sincere. If you are ignorant, then be ignorant. And you will touch my presence. You will enter in me and you will allow me to enter in you. But if you are not capable to feel my presence, then try first to feel my response. Then let me demolish you, destroy you. For the creative explosion to happen. The fourth question. I no longer have the desire to do anything. Nothing seems to matter to me anymore. Life is so much effort. The body requires food and suffers constant physical discomfort. The ego wants attention. The mind continues its constant movement. I often think about how nice it would be to die. Is committing suicide just an escape from life? Is there any reason why one should not commit suicide? Many things have to be understood. The problem is very delicate. First, if you no longer have the desire to do anything, how you will desire suicide? It is a desire. How can you commit suicide without desiring it? In fact, it is the utmost in desire. Nothing seems to matter anymore. If nothing seems to matter anymore, suicide also cannot mean anything. Then how you will choose? How you will choose between life and death? It will be an escape. Escape from life. And somebody who is escaping from life is also escaping from death. That's why I say it is very delicate. If you are fed up with life, if you are really tired of life, if you don't desire anything, bored, then your suicide will have a negative quality to it. It will be just boredom, a fed-upness. It will not be a real suicide. It will be negative. And you will be thrown back into life again. It will be futile. Because life is a discipline. You are here to learn something. If you are ecstatic, if you are celebrating life, and you are so fulfilled that dancing you move into death, then it is no more suicide. It is samadhi. It is nirvana. Buddha also moves into death. But he is not tired of life. He is fulfilled. try to understand the difference. There is only one religion in the world, and that is Jainism, which has given permission to commit suicide. Mahavir, who is the greatest propounder of non-violence, has given permission to his disciples to commit suicide, but to only those who are not fed up with life, who are not bored, not tired, who have lived it completely, perfectly, totally, who have known everything that life can give and who have experienced it. Now they are fulfilled. They are not destroying themselves against life. They are fulfilled. The work is done. They are returning to the source. Mahavir is really very courageous. No other religious teacher has been so courageous to allow suicide. But he has made conditions for it, that it should not be committed in any negative mood, because then you miss the point, you will be thrown back. It should be absolutely positive. And for it, he has made another condition, that one should not take poison or jump from a hill or into the river or into the ocean, no, because that can be done in a single moment. One should fast. Fast unto death. It takes 70, 80, 90, sometimes 100 days. Millions of times there will be a possibility for you to think again and again and again. If you have remained a little unfulfilled, you will come back. To remain with the decision for 100 days is difficult for the mind. Only one who has no mind can remain with the decision for 100 days continuously. Otherwise, any moment, 3, 4 days, 5 days fasting, and the whole body and mind will say, "You fool, start eating, what are you doing? Life is so valuable, and you have not done this and that, you have not lived this and that. Live it, who knows? You may not come back to life again." If you are not really fulfilled, you will come back. For 100 days, to remain with the conclusion, you need absolute no mind. And to move towards death happily, not in a single moment, because in a single moment you can be deluded, you can be in an illusion. One can take poison, that can be done in a single moment. This is my feeling, that people who commit suicide, if even for a single moment they are delayed, they will never commit. Even for a single moment they will change their mind. They commit in a sort of madness. They are so fed up, in a single moment they commit, and they don't have any chance to go back on their own decision. No time left. They jump. They may suffer in the ocean, and they may start crying and weeping and shouting that save, but now it is too late. Their whole being would like to come back to life. They will be soon back into the womb. This is no suicide. A temporary suicide is no suicide. You will be again in another womb, and worse for that, because the commitment of suicide will hang around you. It will become a karma. It will be like a dark shadow, gloominess around your face, around your being. You will move in life shrouded in death. That will not be good. I can admit and I can allow you total suicide. That's what I am here all about. That's what I am doing here. Preaching total suicide. Total means no coming back. That is possible only through deep meditation. A point comes when really all desires disappear. You say that I no longer have the desire to do anything. That's not true. If somebody just offers you the post of the president of USA without any effort on your part, no election campaign, no struggle, just an offer, you will accept it. You are not fed up with life, you are fed up with struggle. It is not that you are in a state of desirelessness, you are in a state of frustration. You desired and you couldn't reach, so now you feel frustrated. If somehow it is possible that an angel appears from God and says to you, now I am ready here, whatsoever desire you have will be fulfilled. Simply tell me, 1,001 desires will struggle to come into your mind. And if he says you can choose only 3 desires, you will be at a loss what to choose and what to leave. You will go mad. Frustration is not desirelessness. Always remember, anything negative is dangerous. Everybody feels frustration. You cannot come across a man who has not contemplated sometime or other to commit suicide in life. Life is such a struggle. Love is a struggle, life is a struggle, everything is a struggle. One comes many times to think about suicide. That gives a temporary relief. Psychologists say that every man of intelligence, I'm not talking about idiots, every man of average intelligence at least thinks 10 times in his life to commit suicide, and thinks sincerely and seriously, contemplates at least 10 times. That is the minimum. Why? Because life is such a struggle. Many times you would like to drop out of it, return the ticket and go back home. But that is a temporary phase. It helps. Just thinking that you can commit suicide, at least if all the ways are closed, one way is open. That helps. That relaxes the mind. You go to sleep. In the morning, you are again going to the shop. You have forgotten all about it. But it was a temporary relief. Just the feeling that if everything fails, then too there is one thing always with me, I can at least commit suicide. If everything has become a bondage, then too there is a hope that I can commit suicide. That is my freedom. Man is free to commit suicide. No other animal can commit suicide. No other animal is so free. You are not free to be born, but you are free to die. There is a higher stage, which in India we call devas. They are not parallel to angels in Christianity, no. Angels look like fairy tales. Devas is a higher stage of consciousness. Animals are absolutely in bondage. They cannot commit suicide. Man is a little free. He is not free to be born. He is not free to come in life, but he is free to go out of it. Devas are both ways free. Free to be born, free to die. That should be so, because the animals exist both the ways closed. Man exists only one way open. Devas is a higher state of consciousness where both the ways are open. They can enter in life, they can go out of it. Entrance and exit both open. They have more freedom, a little more freedom. If you want to commit suicide, remember whether it is because of desirelessness. If it is because of desirelessness, then from where this desire to commit suicide is arising? And if it is because of desirelessness, you will not ask me, you will simply commit. If really you have lived and you are fulfilled, then will you take the trouble to come here and ask me for what? Maybe you are frustrated and you like something to console you, somebody to console you. Maybe you are afraid of the very idea to commit suicide, so you want me to say, no, don't commit. So the responsibility is with me, not with you. But I am not that type of man. I say, if you really want to commit, commit. But then why you are here to ask me? A young man came to ask me that whether he should get married or remain unmarried. That is just like suicide, the same problem. Should one commit suicide or should one remain in life? To remain bachelor is a sort of suicide, because half the life is cut. You have decided to remain half. Marriage is a whole life. So I asked the young man, why you are asking me? If there arises no desire for the woman, from where this question arises, drop out of it. It's okay. No need to go into marriage. But if the desire arises, then go and get married. Then he asked, then why you didn't get married? I asked him, because I decided, but I never asked anybody about it. I have never asked anybody about anything. One should be responsible. I have never asked a single question of life to anybody. What is the point? If I have a clarity, I move through it. Even if I err, that's how my life has to go, through mistakes, through trial and error. But I never throw the responsibility on anybody else. If you want to commit suicide, commit. No, you don't want to commit. You want me to say that this is very bad, this is a great sin, don't commit suicide. So you can hang on me, on my soldiers. You are frustrated, and everybody is frustrated. But by frustration, if you escape from life, you will be thrown back. If live it to the very end, so that the whole illusion is known and you discover that the whole life and its hopes are just like dreams, then you can come out of the dream. Then suicide will not be suicide, then it will be samadhi. Then you don't commit only the body to death, you commit your mind also to death. You become mindless. Then there is no breath to come back. I no longer have the desire to do anything. Nothing seems to matter to me anymore. Life is so much effort. It is. But it is good, because through effort you grow. You become mature. If life is not any effort, how you will mature, how you will grow? You will be just lumps of earth, dead. Life gives you shape, tone. Life gives you sharpness. In fact, everything is as it should be. The struggle is needed to make you more alive. If the struggle is not there, you will be dead before death. That's why it happens. People who have everything in their life, you will always see their faces pale, dead, sad, unintelligent, because they have nothing to struggle for. Rich men's sons are almost always idiotic. Rich people don't give into the world genius, no. Because genius needs a struggle. A struggle gives sharpness. You are rich. Your father has everything. You have nothing to worry. You simply live and vegetate. How you will grow? How you will become mature? Life is so much effort, don't say that. Life has to be effort. The body requires food and suffers constant physical discomfort. What is wrong in that? You would like to have a body which doesn't need any food? Yes, sooner or later science is going to do that, plastic bodies. But can you imagine the nightmare of it? A plastic body with all parts replaceable. You have something wrong and you go to the petrol pump. And they simply change. And comes out the cleaner and cleans you, pumps you, puts some petrol inside, replaces something, or says that the whole thing is gone, rotten. You have to replace the whole body. You have to go to the garage. And in a plastic body, of course, there will be no need for food. And no discomfort. No discomfort at all. If your hand is cut, you will not feel any pain. But when you will embrace your lover, you will not feel any pleasure also, remember. It will be a plastic body meeting another plastic body. It will be more like a collision than like embrace. An accident. Discomfort can disappear. But with it will disappear all comforts. Pain can disappear. Now it is almost within reach. And I think scientists are going to do it. Because the mind has a tendency to complete a certain thing, obsession. Now it is almost within reach. Man can be freed completely from pain, discomfort, illness, disease, even death, because a plastic body will never die. You can go on replacing it. The very point of death is lost. But just think yourself, just contemplate about it a little, that you have a plastic body. how in a plastic body he will become a Buddha. He will remain an idiot. Because the opposites will disappear. And the opposites give you the opportunity to grow. Pain and pleasure, comfort and discomfort, frustration and fulfillment, they give you the opportunity to grow. Don't try to escape. The ego wants attention. The mind continues its constant movement. Then let the ego die. Why you are going to die? You cling to ego. You are ready to destroy the body, but you are not ready to destroy the ego. If ego is the problem, then drop the ego. Body has not done anything to you. Body is a beautiful thing. Body is just like a temple. It is one of the greatest miracles that exists in existence. Enjoy it, celebrate it. Because through it, all celebration is possible. Without it, you will be ghosts in machines. I often think about how nice it would be to die. Nice? Then your desire is there. In fact, you want a nice life. Nice means a life of vegetation, doing nothing and getting everything, without doing any effort, receiving everything. How ungrateful you are. You have received so much without doing anything for it. But never gratitude arises. Rather, on the contrary, the idea of suicide arises. Suicide is the greatest complaint against God. Have you ever thought about it that way? Suicide means that your life is not worth living. Take it back. Suicide means what rotten life you have given to me. I am ready to leave it. Suicide is the greatest complaint that you can lodge against existence and God. No, that is not the way. That will not help. And if you are in search of a nice phenomena, suicide won't help. It is one of the most painful, ugliest phenomena possible. It is not nice. You think within a minute it will end. So you think even if it is hell, within a second it will end. But you don't know anything about time. Within a second you can suffer eternity. Because within a second you can enjoy eternity also. Time is relative. I'm not talking about the clock time. Because in the clock, maybe it is recorded only 1 second and the man was alive and he is dead now. But within that second, what he suffered, you don't know. You can understand a little. Sometimes you are sitting on the table and sleep comes. When you become awake again, only 1 minute has passed in the watch or in the clock. But you dreamed a big dream. You cannot even tell that dream within 1 minute. You will take an hour to tell it in details, the whole dream. You may have lived a whole life from the very birth to very death. Got married and children and their marriage and everything happened within a minute. And only 1 minute has passed in the clock time. Dream time moves on a separate level. This is true that people who die by drowning themselves accidentally or knowingly come to see their whole life in a single second span. The whole life, millions of details, from the very beginning to the very end, to this very moment when they are drowning, they see in a single flash. How it is possible in a single flash, in a single moment, it is possible. Watch nature. There are flies which are born, and within an hour they are dead. You may be thinking in your mind, poor flies, you don't know about time anything. They move in a different time level. In 1 hour they have lived the same as you live in 70 years. They were born, they fall in love, got married, children and everything. And all the misery and frustration and everything happened. Fight, courts, elections, everything. And they are dead within an hour. And your dinner is not finished. You started your dinner and it is not finished, and their whole life is finished. And they lived the same as you live in 70 years. A very compact, compressed life. And in fact, if you can live in 1 hour the whole of 70 lives, it seems a wastage of time to live it in 70 years. In fact, man should be called the poor man, not the poor fly. The fly seems to be more intelligent. It lives the whole life within 1 hour. And for that life you need 70 years. You are not so intelligent, so clever. In a single moment of suicide, you suffer the whole hell. In a single moment of samadhi, you celebrate the whole heaven. Time is not a question, because time has many layers. Suicide can never be nice if it is out of frustration. If it is a flowering, if simply you have grown out of life, you have reached a point where life has nothing else to offer to you, you have learned the whole thing, then your school is complete, your training over, then there is a possibility, as in Mahavir's discipline, he allows. But even then I will not allow, because my feeling is that if you have really learned everything, what is the point in committing suicide? Why can't you wait? What is the hurry? If you are so fulfilled, what is the hurry to finish yourself? Why can't you wait? If you can't wait, at least one thing you have not learned, that is patience. So I am not for Mahavir. Those people who are trying to commit suicide, at least lack patience. They will have to be thrown back to life, because that is one of the very greatest points to be learned. Patience, awaiting. They lack that quality. Otherwise, what is the hurry? If you became enlightened at the age of 40, and you will die at the age of 70, can't you wait for 30 years? What type of enlightenment is this, that you can't wait for it? This is a tense state of affairs. You seem to be very anxiety ridden. You don't seem to be really happy and flowering. A man of enlightened consciousness accepts life, accepts death. When it comes, he does not ask death to wait 1 minute more. When it is not coming, he does not invite her to come a single minute before. What is the point? Whether death comes today or tomorrow, it is the same to him. This patience is the final flowering. And I think Mahavir's attitude may be courageous, but it's wrong. Courage is always not right. Just courage in itself is not right. Many more things are implied and understood, have to be understood. Is committing suicide just an escape from life? Yes. Is there any reason why one should not commit suicide? There is no reason. But there is no reason also why one should commit. Life is irrational. There is no reason to live. There is no reason to die. Life is not a cause-effect phenomena. It is a mystery. There is no reason to live and continue to live. But that is not reason enough to die. There is no reason to commit suicide. So what to do? Float. You have no reason either way. So don't choose. Remain choiceless. If you choose, you will be thrown again and again back into the whole wheel of life and death. If you remain choiceless, you will simply disappear from the wheel into the cosmos. That is the real suicide. That is the real phenomena. Then you cannot be forced back into the material life, into the body. Then you live a bodiless existence. That's what moksha means, total liberation. Fifth question, I know I should be unattached. Now I judge myself for having bought beautiful orange material rather than having the courage to run around like some do in some dirty rag. Now at least have the courage to wear those beautiful orange things. I am not against beauty. And I am not for rags. But I am not against rags also. If you enjoy rags, it is for you to decide. If you enjoy beautiful things, it is for you to decide. And one should be left totally free about it. For these small things also, the society does not allow you freedom. If I was to decide, I will give you total freedom. If you want to move naked, you should move. If I had the decision in my hand, I will make only one thing, only one rule, that you should not interfere in anybody else's freedom. That's all. When you interfere in anybody's freedom, then only you commit crime. If you are doing a thing by your own self and it is nobody else's business, you should be completely free. The state should be only there to guarantee everybody his own freedom, freedom to do his own thing. The state should not be a positive phenomena. It should be just a negative phenomena. Negative in the sense that you enjoy your life, but others are also there, and they have to enjoy their life. You should not interfere in their life, and they should not interfere in your life. That's all the state is meant to do. It is not to create order. It is only to create a situation in which the disorder is to be prevented. That's all. So if somebody is enjoying reds, reds are beautiful for him. Nobody should interfere. And if you enjoy beautiful clothes, why not? Why you feel afraid to enjoy beautiful clothes? That is for you to decide. Be courageous. There is only one courage I support, and that is the courage to be oneself. Be courageous. Have the courage to be oneself. And don't bother about anybody else unless you are interfering in anybody else's life and freedom. Only then prevent yourself. Now, if you are wearing beautiful clothes, you are not interfering in anybody's life. It is for you to decide. But the mind has become such a conditioning phenomena, conditioned phenomena, that it always looks at the society, what others are doing. If you live in the world of the establishment, the esquire world, you have to follow certain rules. In fact, nobody ever says you to follow them, but you follow, just by tradition, a certain conformity. You have to use a certain type of dress. You have to cut your hairs in a certain way. You have to use this and that. You follow a pattern. Then if you become a hippie, again the mind starts following another pattern. Now you have to have long hairs. If you don't have, people will laugh. They will say you are a squire. Then you have to wear rags. If you don't wear, then we'll say, what are you doing here? You no more belong to us. You are an outsider, an intruder. So there are two types of conformities: the conformity of the establishment and the conformity of the rebel. But both are conformities. Somewhere short hair, somewhere long hair, and both are the same. Not a bit of difference exists. If you live in a hippie world and don't smell like hell, you are not a hippie, not a true hippie. You will be rejected. You have to be dirty. You have to be unclean, otherwise you are not rebellious. If you move in the established world, the establishment, then you have to use perfume and shaving lotion and this and that. If you go there unclean, you will not be accepted. Mind is a conformist. So I know only one rebellion, and that is the rebellion of a meditative mind. The rebellion in which you drop the mind. And then you move on your own. But always remember, you should not interfere in anybody else's life. For example, if you want to be dirty, then go to the Himalayas. Because to be dirty can interfere in other people's lives. When you are dirty and smelling bad, you may not be attacking by your hands, but you are attacking by your smell. It is aggression. If the other feels that this is the disturbance to him. You are aggressive. If you want to be dirty, nothing is wrong in being dirty, but then you move to the Himalayas, to the farther end. So nobody comes in contact to you. Then you can enjoy your bad odor and enjoy it blissfully. You have no right to throw your smell and dirt on others. No. That's not good. Nobody should in any way interfere in anybody else's life. And nobody should allow anybody else to interfere in his life. This is what a man should be. Not trying to enslave others and not allowing anybody to enslave him. One should live a life of freedom and one should allow others to live freely. Don't be afraid if you love beautiful orange material, use it. It is good. Whatsoever you love is good. Only one condition, if it doesn't interfere, it is beautiful, it is moral. Sixth question. I have a question, but I can't figure out what it is. I have also the answer. But unless you figure out, I will not figure it out. Right? Seventh question, we come out of nothingness and go back into it. The soul remains around the body if the body is buried after death and it leaves the body immediately if the body is burned. How is the soul related to nothingness? You missed the whole point. The soul is the nothingness. It is not related. The soul is the nothingness. The body is something. The soul is nothing. The body is filled. The soul is empty. That's why body has form and the soul is formless. But the very word nothingness makes you afraid and scared. The soul, nothing, then where your ego will be standing? Then no foothold is left. In fact, there is no foothold. Ego exists as a dream exists, with no foothold, with no substance in it. Ego exists like a marriage. If you move inwards, you will come to feel more and more that there is nothingness, vast space. You will not encounter anybody. You will not find anybody there. You will not find the thing called Atma, the self. No, they are just other names for the ego, religious names, spiritual names. But names of the ego. You will not find anybody there. Nobody is there. And that's the beauty of it. And when you encounter that nothingness, you become absolutely silent. You become that nothingness. That is the fear of going inwards. That's why you go out and out and out. You go on farther journeys. But you never go on the nearest journey. From New York to Kabul, from Kabul to Delhi, from Delhi to Pune, from Pune to Goa, from Goa to Kathmandu, you go around the world, but you don't go in. And that is the nearest beach and the nearest mountain and the nearest Mecca and the nearest Kasi, the nearest temple, the Gurdwara. But there you never go, because if you go there you become scared. It is a death. You die there. You ask about suicide, go in. And the suicide will happen without committing it. Go in and you will not find yourself. You disappear. You evaporate. And in that absence, all is present. In that nothingness is the whole. The eighth question. It seems that energy and the ego are the same. Instead of dropping the ego, should not we learn to use it? That is the meaning of dropping it. If you can use the ego, it is dropped already. Right now, the ego is using you. The ego has become the master. And you have become the servant, the slave. Things are upside down in you. Dropping the ego simply means dropping the ego from the throne. Of course, one has to use, even I have to use the word I continuously. One has to use it. If you use it, it is dropped. If you are being used by it, that is the problem. Dropping the ego does not mean that you drop the very word I. No, but when you use it, there is no ego in it. The ego can be ego only when it is throned, when it sits on a high. When it becomes the center of your whole life, use it. It will be dropped. Or drop it, you will become capable of using it. The ninth question. Can we have a tea ceremony with you one day instead of lecture? Do you think my lecture is something else? Then you have been missing the tea that I am offering to you. The tea is a symbol of awareness because it doesn't allow you to sleep. That's all I am offering to you. You come to me and I say to you, have a cup of tea. That is the whole meaning of whatsoever I have been telling you. A cup of tea. And the last question. When you die, will you invite us to come with you? I would not like to be left behind when you go. Why should we wait for my death to come? I give you a standing invitation. I give you right now. Remember that if you are with me this moment, you will be with me forever. Why postpone it to the time of my death? If you postpone it today, tomorrow will be my death. Again you will postpone it. So the first thing to remember, if you want to be with me, be here and now with me. Don't bother about death and tomorrow. That's not the point. It is all irrelevant. Be here with me. You have received the invitation. You can be then with me forever. That is not the point to be discussed at all. If you are here with me, this moment, you will be with me forever, because this moment contains eternity. There is no other moment except this. There is no other time than the present. Enough for today.